I'm Anne Maria Wadd.
And I'm Sue Lincoln. This is Roo Radio.
There's perhaps no animal more beloved by LSU fans than Mike the Tiger. But what's the Regal mascot's life really like? Frank Barnett went behind the cage to find out.
About half of Louisiana's workforce faces barriers to employment. That's according to a new study released by the Center for Planning Excellence. Anne Maria Wadd finds out more from CPEX's Jessica Kemp.
The Nature Conservancy in Louisiana and the Indianapolis Zoo are teaming up to draw attention to the Gulf of Mexico's dead zone. Nick Jansen has that story.
Louisiana has its own irises. Dan Gill explains why now is the perfect time to help them put on their colorful spring show.
Louisiana will elect its next governor this fall. Political strategist James Carville shares his thoughts on the race and how citizens can hold elected officials accountable.
Thanks for joining us on 89.3 WRKF. Wake up to WRKF with the WRKF app's built-in alarm clock, available for Apple or Android.
Welcome back to Roo Radio. I'm Anne Maria Wadd.
And I'm Sue Lincoln. LSU's live tiger mascot, Mike Six, is a fan favorite. Whether in his on-campus habitat or in his cage trailer, rolling past the opposing team's bench with a snarl intended to intimidate. Yet Mike missed all of LSU's 2014 home football games. WRKF's Frank Barnett went to find out why. What he found was a friendship between a doctor and his patient.
The big question about LSU's Mike the Tiger lately has been, will he ever go to another football game? Personally, I've always wondered, what does he do all day?
I mean, once he's out in the yard?
Yeah, once he's out in the yard.
He gets in his pool,
yeah.
He sleeps, and he defecates.
That is Dr. David Baker, Mike Six's personal veterinarian. He's been the primary vet for Mike the Tiger for 19 years, and when he took the job, he'd never worked with a tiger before. He had worked with cats, though. House cats.
They are very much like house cats. In fact, they're so similar that it does sometimes surprise me.
If you've ever owned a cat, then you'll understand this.
Life is very much on their terms, meaning some days they're very interactive and affectionate, and other days they ignore you completely. Very curious, very wary. They don't like new things. If anything is different in this enclosure, he will recognize it within minutes.
Boy, that's true, because when Mike approached us, it was obvious that he knew who one of us was, and it wasn't me.
He's walking up here now because he knows. He heard me close the gate.
So he completely recognizes you.
What do you think?
Those sounds are known as moans and chuffs. Chuffs are happy.
And what he was saying there was that he knows me and he was happy to see me, but he didn't know who that guy with me was. And he'll do that when strangers are close to him.
I graduated from LSU in 2009, so Mike is nothing new to me. But with Dr. Baker right by my side, I was seeing a side of Mike I had never seen before.
So where does he like to be scratched?
He likes to be scratched on his back and his belly, just like any guy, I suppose.
Like house cats, tigers are good at masking health problems. Caring for tigers requires attention to detail, making the job a 24/7 responsibility. As a result, tigers form bonds with their caretakers. Dr. Baker remembers when Mike Six first came to LSU.
At that time, everything in his life changed. He was in a new environment. He was by himself. He needed a friend. And so he bonded very closely with me and with my two student caretakers. And so when they left, when they graduated, he was so upset at the turnover that he lost 70 pounds.
But don't worry, he gained it back. Because when he eats a lot, averaging 25 to 30 pounds of a prepared carnivore diet a day. And on special occasions, he gets a dead chicken or a pig, and his favorite snack is an oxtail.
This is his night house, and you can see there's a little food preparation area that we're standing in. His food gets thawed here in the refrigerator before it's fed to him, and we feed him between 4 and 6 of those logs. They're 5-pound logs.
Inside are 2 holding cells, one for eating and one for sleeping. The one for sleeping has a bed made of pine shavings, and right next to his bed is a door.
And the trailer is on the other side of that door. So for him to load, We just open that door and either he goes in or he doesn't. You can see that it's a fairly open area and there is no physical means of forcing him into the trailer. We wouldn't do that even if we could. We don't think that would be humane.
Dr. Baker makes it clear that while Mike Six may have similarities to a house cat, he is a Bengal Siberian tiger living in captivity on campus. Happy and healthy is his main objective. After all, he too has bonded with Mike.
I want him to do whatever he wants to do. That's all there is to it.
For WRKF, I'm Frank Barnett.
Sounds like more than just friendship. It sounds like love, when you want what's best for the other person, or tiger, and what makes them happy.
The Baton Rouge Arts Market is back on October 3rd from 8 a.m. until 12 p.m. The open-air market features over 70 artists from Louisiana and the Southeast. For more information, visit artsbr.org.
Ever been late to work because you missed the bus or didn't have a car? Well, you're not the only one. According to a recent report from the Center for Planning Excellence, area transportation problems are holding us back economically. The study found about half of Louisiana's workforce faces barriers to employment, with transportation being one of the largest problems that disconnects workers. Ann got a closer look at the report.
This is Insight. I'm Ann Maria Watt. Dr. Jessica Kemp is Vice President for Policy and Advocacy at the Center for Planning Excellence. She authored CPEX's report on disconnected workers, which explores barriers to economic development statewide and particularly in the nine parish capital region. Jessica, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So we should probably get this out of the way first. What is a disconnected worker?
A disconnected worker is someone who has no employment history or has maybe a very spotty employment history. This is someone who faces multiple barriers to full-time sustained employment.
Early on in the report, you point to this Baton Rouge Area Chamber report that kind of looks at what we should be doing to increase workforce development. And basically, the approach is, as it has always been, really, is to say, you know, these industries are demanding these workers. Here's what we need to do to meet those demands. The CPEX report, however, seems to say, instead of looking at industry demands, we need to look at workforce needs.
Kind of. I wouldn't put it exactly that way.
Okay.
I think we want to say, in addition to focusing on training skilled workers for those middle skill jobs, we also need to be looking at the entry point of the pipeline and getting more people engaged in entry level work so that they are then in a position down the road to train for some of those skilled jobs, with the larger objective of making sure that more people who are in need in Louisiana have access to all the new jobs and new opportunities that are coming along with the recent spate of economic growth.
You also point to some organizations that are doing work to serve disconnected workers. So this may kind of further illustrate what a disconnected worker is. So tell me a little bit about the type of services that Goodwill Hope Ministries, United Way are providing.
Sure. I think the thing that unites them all is that they provide a wide range of services. They all recognize that disconnected workers need a variety of things, and it's different for every person, every individual. So in addition to literacy training and, you know, basic skills and knowledge, they may be teaching literacy. They may be helping with family stability. They may be helping with food and shelter. So a lot of disconnected workers face just this compendium of issues, and it really takes a lot of concerted effort and a broad range of knowledge to be able to address those issues.
And one of the biggest issues your report points to is transportation.
Yes.
So transportation is time and time again one of the biggest obstacles to disconnected workers.
That's right. And unfortunately, that's not something that most of these service providers can offer. We need to look to other agencies to be coordinating with those service providers to provide that kind of access. But at CPEX, we have heard from all of these organizations and others that transportation is a consistent barrier for workers who are trying really hard to advance their situation, access services, get more education, get the training they need. They want these opportunities, but if they don't have access to a personal vehicle, they may not be able to do it.
Now, what are CPEX's recommendations when it comes to transportation?
Well, our transit system is a key player in this. And we all know that CATS has had had its troubles, but it has made some really important steps forward towards making improvements in the quality of the service and the reach of the service. So CPEX is very supportive of those efforts and just hope to see them continue to expand and improve with a focus on making sure that those who would rely on transit as their primary means of transportation are those who are prioritized for those expansions and improvements.
Jessica Kemp, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
This is Insight. I'm Anne Marie Awad.
You're tuned to 89.3 WRKF. Become a sustaining member and provide continuous support to the news you hear every day. Go to WRKF.org.
Monday, September 28th, our fall fund drive gets underway as we begin work to meet our $70,000 drive goal. Be sure to donate that first day because we have a $5,000 Friends of the Station challenge at play. When we raise $8,000 by the end of the first day, we'll get the $5,000 put up by Friends of WRKF. So be sure to make your donation Monday, September 28th, and make that first day and the whole drive a success. Thank you so much for your support.
You're listening to Rue Radio. I'm Anne Marie Awad.
And I'm Sue Lincoln. On Tuesday, September 29th, Chelsea's Cafe will host their monthly event, Science Cafe. Join LSU professor John Supan for his talk, The World is Your Oyster, the Life Cycle and Future of Louisiana's Most Beloved Bivalve. The event is free and runs from 5 to 7 p.m.
This next story is about the Gulf of Mexico's dead zone, which forms every summer off the coast of Louisiana. Larger than the state of Connecticut this year, the dead zone forms because of high nutrient concentrations. The Mississippi River Basin delivers those nutrients from the Midwest to the Gulf. To draw attention to this problem, the Indianapolis Zoo formed a partnership with the Nature Conservancy of Louisiana. Nick Jansen has this story.
This is Louisiana's Lab. I'm Nick Jansen. You wouldn't think Indiana and Louisiana have much in common, but that hasn't stopped the Indianapolis Zoo from developing a partnership with the Nature Conservancy in Louisiana. Their goal? To draw attention to the Gulf of Mexico's dead zone.
So it's a phenomena that, as my understanding, didn't even really exist before the 1970s, but is an environmental response to high nutrient loads, primarily nitrogen and phosphorus.
Seth Blitch is the coastal program manager for the Nature Conservancy in Louisiana. Those high nutrient loads induce dangerously low oxygen concentrations in the Gulf.
It's an area where you can't live.
Judy Palermo is the senior manager for public relations at the Indianapolis Zoo. The Nature Conservancy helped the Indianapolis Zoo film a video of wild dolphins swimming off the coast of Grand Isle for the zoo's new dolphin exhibit. The video will help explain the connection between Indiana and the Gulf's dead zone.
One of the tenets of conservation and ecology is that everything is connected in some way, and that's true everywhere, and it's evident in the Gulf and in the Mississippi River Basin because the basin itself drains about 41% of the United States.
And basically, 10 to 11% of the nitrates and phosphates in the Gulf actually come from Indiana.
It's those nutrients from the Midwest that find their way through the Mississippi River Basin and into the Gulf that cause the dead zone. Palermo hopes the new dolphin exhibit will help the zoo's visitors better understand that connection between society and ecology.
We always say that we are a conservation organization that just happens to have a zoo. The choices we make in Indiana don't just affect us, they affect animals states away.
For Louisiana's Lab, I'm Nick Jansen.
Support for healthcare and science coverage on Louisiana's Lab comes from Brazil, Saxe & Wilson, serving the legal and business needs of people and companies throughout Louisiana, and from ExxonMobil Baton Rouge, supporting education in science, technology, engineering, and math.
Nick will have more on the partnership between the Nature Conservancy and the Indianapolis Zoo in the weeks to come.
Monty Python's Spamalot is currently running at Theater Baton Rouge. The comic tale of King Arthur and his Knights of the Round Table, as they go on a quest for the Holy Grail, runs until October 4th, with performances Thursday through Saturday nights and Sunday afternoons. For more information, visit theaterbr.org. Up next on Bayou Garden, Dan Gill talks Louisiana irises.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to Bayou Garden on 89.3 WRKF. I'm Dan Gill with the LSU Ag Center. It still surprises me that many Louisiana gardeners are not familiar with our native Louisiana irises. Hopefully you have some of these wonderful plants growing in your garden, and if not, you really should consider planting some. For gardeners who already have these beautiful irises growing in their gardens, Louisiana irises can be divided and transplanted anytime from August through early October. Louisiana irises are at their most dormant stage in the late summer, and that makes now the ideal time to divide them. You might have noticed how many brown or yellow leaves are on your plants right now. Even if you decide you don't need to divide them this year, it's still a good idea to get in and clean out the unattractive foliage before the new growth starts in earnest next month. Also, add more mulch if needed to maintain a depth of about 2 inches. Each year, Louisiana irises grow and spread, creating more rhizomes and shoots. Eventually, the plants may become crowded, and that can lead to lower vigor and poor flowering. This generally occurs several years after the bed is planted, depending on how close they were planted to begin with and how much room they have to spread. Clumps may also grow beyond their allotted space, and dividing them will help keep the clump the size you want it to be and prevent the irises from taking over areas where they were not intended to grow. The first step is to use a shovel or a garden fork to lift the Louisiana iris plants out of the bed. Try to get as much of those roots as possible, and don't damage the little fans of green new growth you see at the ends of the rhizomes. Now put these plants aside in a shady area, hose them down, and even throw something over them to make sure they don't dry out. Once the bed is empty, take the opportunity to improve the soil of the bed before you replant the irises. Till the soil, get out all the weeds, and then spread a 2-inch layer of compost or other organic matter over the soil. Sprinkle a light application of fertilizer over the area, following label directions, and then thoroughly incorporate the fertilizer and organic matter into the soil of the bed. While you're doing this, make sure the roots of the irises dug out of the bed don't dry out, so check them every now and again and wet them down if you need to. Now comes the step of dividing the irises. To divide your irises, look at the clump carefully. You're going to see that young rhizomes branch off from the older rhizomes. The younger rhizomes have a fan of green leaves at their tips, with roots growing out from the rhizome at the base of the leaves. Break or cut off the young rhizomes at the point where they branch off from the old rhizomes. You can discard the old rhizomes and then replant the young rhizomes back into your prepared bed. Plant the rhizomes horizontally with the fan of the foliage facing the direction you want the plant to grow, and carefully cover all the roots. Space the rhizomes about a foot apart. The top of the rhizome should be just below or barely show at the soil surface. Mulch the bed about 2 inches thick and water it thoroughly. If you have any rhizomes left over and you want to share them with friends, very easy to do. Just pot them up in pots of potting soil and share them with friends as you can, or plant them in other areas of your landscape if you like. If the weather should become dry this fall, winter, or spring, don't forget to water your irises once or twice a week. They really enjoy being kept well hydrated with lots of water. And in the spring, around about May or so, the plants will have heavy seed pods on them after they finish blooming. Cut those seed pods off. That prevents the plants from wasting effort on the seeds and keeps the plants more attractive. So divide your Louisiana irises. This is Bayou Garden. I'm Dan Gill. Join us next week at this time for more on your garden. Podcasts of the show are available at wrkf.org.
For more Bayou Garden, just visit wrkf.org. And don't forget, like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Friends of the Baton Rouge Zoo are hosting their second annual Brew at the Zoo Friday, October 2nd from 6 to 10 p.m. Guests 21 and older are invited for food, beer tasting, music, and more. Visit brzoobrew.org for more information.
Coming up on Capital Access, political strategist James Carville discusses the importance of voter engagement with this year's gubernatorial election.
This is Capital Access. I'm Sue Lincoln. WRKF's first annual Founders Luncheon featured political strategist James Carville.
Every white Democrat in South Baton Rouge is here, all 30 of you.
Carville, who lives in New Orleans and teaches political science at Tulane, brought his acerbic wit to bear on the governor's race. He gleefully noted that David Vitter has spent more time going after New Orleans Mayor Mitch Landrieu over the Confederate monuments then attending forums with his fellow gubernatorial candidates.
Senator Vitter, he's all upset because he loves the Confederate generals. Well, actually, there was one general, Union general, that he's very fond of, that's General Joseph Hooker. That's fun, but the real issues that we're talking about in this state are not.
Carville got serious then.
I'll never tell you who to vote for or who not to vote for. That's your business. But what I can tell you is you have to force the issue. What we're faced with here is a fiscal crisis of the first order, a crisis in higher education, not to mention health care, hospitals, not to mention environmental crisis, not to mention the price of oil being where it is. And it's not enough to just shrug your head. You have to be involved. You have to force the issue.
Carville noted every candidate has said he will call a special session first thing if elected, but no one is pushing them to say what they'll do in that session.
What are you going to call it for? What's going to be on the agenda? How are you going to fund the state?
He left the capacity crowd with something to ponder.
Political leadership matters. And I got to tell you that our survival is not a given.
For Capital Access, I'm Sue Lincoln.
Support for Capital Access comes from Southern Strategy Group, governmental relations, strategic planning, and public relations in Baton Rouge, and Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, supporting Louisiana agriculture through education.
I'm Anne Maria Wadd.
And I'm Sue Lincoln. You're listening to Rue Radio.
Sue, Carville's comments at the Founders' Luncheon obviously stuck with you. Did anything else he said stand out?
It wasn't part of his speech Tuesday. Rather, it was something he said when I interviewed him in New Orleans the week before.
The voters have to engage the candidates. They have to hold people accountable. They have to ask the right questions.
Voters, honestly, even us reporters, can't always get to the candidates to ask the questions. Beginning Monday, Capital Access is doing a 10-part series to examine the issues that plague Louisiana and find out what the men who would be king plan to do about those problems. With a generous nod to Huey Long, I'm calling the series Every Man a King.
We look forward to your coverage of the election in the weeks to come. That's all for the show this week. Coming up on Out to Lunch, Stephanie Regal speaks with some folks from three Baton Rouge tech companies.
Our theme music was composed by John Tully. Rue Radio is produced by Nick Jansen.
This has been your food for thought. Until next week.